welcome to episode number 17 of Investing from the Beach. I'm Chris Hansen, your host, and I've got my co-host with me today, Chris Lamb.
Hello, it's Chris Lamb.
And if you're new to the show, quick background on us. You can go listen to prior episodes. Some of the earlier ones have a lot more detail on us. But quick background, we both achieved time freedom, which is different than financial freedom, but we both achieved time freedom at a relatively young age. I got there when I was about 40, 41. Chris got there when he was about, how old were you, 30, 31, 32?
31. 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, ballpark that. I'm about 20 years older than Chris, and it took me that much longer. I got there in my early 40s. He got there in his early 30s. We both worked for IBM. We both happened to be in sales. About the time that I walked out of IBM is about the time that Chris walked in. We overlapped by a couple of years and got to meet each other there and developed an awesome friendship and have stayed in contact, remained great friends, and the relationship blossoms and grows as the years passed. And as we both achieved time freedom via the stock market, we have had countless discussions about what it takes and what it took to achieve that, I guess you call it an elusive goal that many people want to get to. What we've come to realize, both as the two of us and as individuals, is that it takes probably 5% of it is how to do, and 95% of it is how to think. And what you'll find is the vast majority of people focus all their effort on the how to do, and they ignore, they overlook, or they don't want to look at the how to think. And that's why you find a lot of people frustrated and can't seem to achieve that goal of time freedom. And that's what we talk about in this podcast. It's all about the how to think aspects of things. You know, one of these days I should probably, Chris, record that recording so I don't have to say it each time, but it comes out a little different each time, so hopefully it's not too bad.
I thought that's what the plan was.
Well, you know, that's what you get when you don't have to plan stuff.
And a lot of people, when they first listen to it, they listen to the entire thing, but after the few episodes, I think they just zoom by it.
Yeah, they're fast forwarding, like, all right, yeah. Is he 3 minutes? Is he 2 minutes? How far into it do I need to go to get to it? But so let's just kick off. So in earlier episodes, we have talked about the stock market. We've talked the pros of the stock market. We've talked the cons of the stock market. We've talked about, and that's what we know very well. We've talked about real estate, and we've talked about the amount of team effort that it takes. I've got a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of experience on that. A lot of secondhand experience and having grown up with it in the family, but have a lot of very good friends that I've had very long detailed discussions about this. So I have a lot of the how-to mechanics. I haven't had to deal with the emotion side of it, thankfully. We've also talked in the show a little bit about entrepreneurship and the requirement for reliance on others. And we've even mentioned a little bit about small business startups, the amount of personal time it requires. We haven't delved into that one deeply. But the one thing we haven't touched on is MLM, multi-level marketing. And so today we're going to talk about that. This is not going to be a sell job to get you to sign up for Amway or Herbalife or some vitamin or supplement or financial services company or anything like that. It's really to have kind of take a big picture look from what we know of an MLM and kind of the how to think perspective. If it's something you want to pursue, awesome. If it's something you absolutely abhor and hate, awesome. But I would still listen to this because there's some good things that you'll pick up from the discussion that could apply either to an MLM or to any other business entity or venture that you're thinking about taking a look at.
And Chris, I know a lot of us probably know what an MLM is, but I'm sure there's a few people that have, that's a new term for them. Maybe to give an example of what that is or...
Sure. So, Chris, let's do this. I'm flipping a coin. You call heads or tails, and I'll toss it.
Okay.
Go.
Tail.
Oh, shucks. You win. Okay, you get to define it.
Well, we'll go through a little bit more characteristic of an MLM, but just a high-level, multi-level marketing. When if you haven't been approached, but if you hear people talk about, hey, I just started this business, and they're into recruiting people to join their team, right? That's typically what an MLM business is about, right? It could be, doesn't matter what products or service they're providing, but the structure of that business, it's about recruiting team members onto the team to, go and sell that product or service. And then generally the person that recruits you will make money on the override.
What is an override?
or they'll make the money off of you selling the product. So that's called an override.
Okay.
And so Chris, usually when you sell something, you're going to get commission, and then you get you share a piece of that commission to the person that recruited you.
So let's take one step back. What does MLM stand for?
Multi-level marketing.
Multi-level marketing. You'll also hear referred to as network marketing.
And that's
so,
correct.
Yeah. So the idea, if you look at these things, almost always they're a sales arm or a sales channel for somebody else's product or somebody else's service. So you could be whatever it is, Herbalife. I'll just use them as an example, not picking on them. And if somebody out there is a distributor or is involved with Herbalife, if I say things that are incorrect, I'm getting the concept. I'm not picking on Herbalife per se. But the idea is I don't even know if Herbalife manufactures a product. I think they get it from somebody else, but let's assume they do. And they hire a sales company, if you will, a sales arm to go out and market and deliver their product. Somebody else's product. So they're usually not a manufacturer, but they're a sales and marketing channel for a set of products or services.
They're almost like more like your broker type or your agent, just the middleman.
Yep, exactly. And if the company does have a branded product, meaning it is an Herbalife or an Amway or whatever else, in my experience, everything that I've ever looked at, and I'm sure there are exceptions, but everyone I've ever looked at is usually a private label on somebody else's product. Now, there may be exceptions. Save your time on email and voicemail. I don't need to hear it. But generally speaking, more often than not, if it's a branded product, in my experience, Chris, I think you've had the same whenever we've looked at these, usually it's a private label on somebody else's product. If you don't know what private label means, commonplace that you'll see this, if you walk into Trader Joe's, they're headquartered out here in Southern California. Chris and I actually both had a relationship with them at various times in our IBM career. Trader Joe's will sell sometimes other people's products on the shelves. And a lot of times you can buy a Trader Joe's branded product. But if you take a look at it, actually what they're doing is they're having the manufacturer or the producer make it in special packaging and put the Trader Joe's label on it. And it might be very similar to what you might find from another label. Not saying the Cheerios are the same, but they could be very, very, very similar as an example.
Yeah, they can customize the product or have their own specification in the product. So like Trader Joe's, if you wanted to buy their ketchup somewhere else, you're not going to be able to get it, right? Because they have their their own ingredient that they require to be in that product.
So, and you might see it if you go into a Kroger grocery store, right? You can find a Kroger brand of whether it's tomato sauce or jam and jelly or who knows what all.
Stuff like that. We all know about Kirkland.
Yes, Kirkland for Costco.
That's it.
And then we've got, there's a PC company, right, that everybody's familiar with, Dell, right? So Dell is not a manufacturer of any components, right? Dell puts their name on somebody else's product. They're not a manufacturer. They're more an assembler using other people's components. So, but basically the definition of an MLM, more often than not, is it's a company that is put in place to sell, market, deliver, what have you, basically the sales and marketing arm for a set of products or services. The thing that I've noticed in my experience, and Chris, I know you've had the same, when somebody approaches you about an MLM or a quote unquote business opportunity, it oftentimes is veiled under the idea of either, hey, come out, I'm going to educate you on something and there's a business opportunity there. Or more often than that, you'll hear it kind of spun that way, as opposed to somebody saying, hey, Chris, why don't you come out with me today? I've got an opportunity for you to come work with me at IBM, right? They're very, very secretive, sly, almost like they're embarrassed about it. There's no pride in trying to get you to come to their meeting to talk about their offering.
Yeah, if you get somebody asking you or telling you to attend some type of meeting and they're not very specific about it and they're kind of, you know, hiding something, chances are it's an MLM they're talking about.
And they're not, if they don't answer your questions, more likely than not, it's an MLM. So, and not that that's good or bad, it is what it is. But so with that suggestion, if you are involved with an MLM, if I could offer words of advice, be open about it. If somebody's going to reject you, cool, don't waste your time on them. But it's really annoying when people try and sneak one by on you.
I mean, there's nothing wrong working in an MLM business.
Not a bit.
Right. And I think most people feel, you know, like they got to hide something, but there's nothing to hide. If you understand what it is, right, the pros and cons, and that's to your advantage. And I think most people don't understand that. So we'll take a deep dive into what an MLM is and ways to think about it.
So let's start with that. Let's go through the pro con then, since you brought it up. Some of the pros that you see, right? It's an opportunity. If you don't have a sales background or the ability to, in your current endeavor, work on salesmanship, it's a great opportunity to learn. You're going to get rejected. You're going to get turned down. And this is the way for you to figure out how to deal with it. But the salesmanship skills and learning opportunities are priceless. And from that standpoint, if it were just that alone, pardon me, I would urge everybody to go join an MLM at some point, just so that you get the experience and the knowledge of learning how to sell.
And especially for young people, college students, right, or people just, you know, coming out of college with very little work experience. It's a great opportunity for you to develop your skills. It's, you know, how many companies out there really hire people to do sales jobs with absolute zero sales experience? And I don't see it.
You don't see it. And if you do get hired in that situation, you're going to struggle, right? Most of the time, if you get hired in that, it's usually a very low-end job. Mm-hmm. And it's not the place if you have to start there, you do what you got to do.
Yeah, but if you have no sales experience, I think it's mostly they put you behind the phone and you're actually just dialing and calling people, telemarketing.
Yep, dial and smile. Yeah. Dialing and smiling. So you learn the salesmanship skills. You also learn what? Interpersonal skills. Mm-hmm. So you learn to, if you're not a social animal, you're going to learn some social skills. And you'll figure out and hopefully be taught the ability how to connect with people.
Yeah, and for those that have not been involved in an MLM type of business, it's usually, I think your main job is to go meet with people, really to get to know everyone. It's just to go network. That's why they call it network marketing. And so the more people you know, the more opportunities you have to bring people into your business. So it forces you to talk to strangers. You know, you could be standing in a food line and the person behind you, the person in front of you, and the side of you, right? You carry conversation.
Just engage them.
And so just by doing that, it's going to build skill sets, right? Where else will you have that opportunity?
And now with that, Chris, you and I think you learned an MLM. I might have heard it from somebody from that. But I've used it for years and it has always worked. It's the acronym FORM, FORM. It's an easy way to engage somebody in discussion. And what you can do is when you meet them, you know, however you do the introduction, start talking, pick any one of those you want to start with and just start asking questions and don't ask closed-ended questions. Don't ask a question that could be answered with a yes, no. You know, ask them something that requires a sentence or a paragraph to answer. F stands for family. O stands for occupation. R is recreation. M is money. And money doesn't mean...
Yeah, I thought it was a wonderful acronym.
It's awesome. And money doesn't mean how much do you make? How much do you have? Can you invest with me? It's not that at all. Yeah. But you can talk bigger picture. You can talk about the stock market. You can talk about, hey, what do you think about this?
And don't go ask people how much money you have.
Yeah, exactly. You'll end up giving
how much money you make.
Yep, or how much money do you have? And then you'll be looking down the barrel of a gun and say, I'd like it. So, but you can, if you haven't tried that, next time you go to a backyard barbecue or even a line at the grocery store, just make it a point, the person behind you, around you, try that form concept. It's really cool how easy it is.
And it doesn't have to be in that order.
No.
Right? But just a couple of questions around family. Where do you come from? Background. Where did you grow up? Stuff related to family, right? How were you raised?
You have
how big of a family? Brothers,
you have a
sisters.
Unique name. You have a unique name. Where is that from? What does it mean? Mm-hmm. Right? Any of that stuff. Occupation. If you ask somebody, so what's your job? What do you do? Right? If you've all been to networking events and somebody opens with that, you'll find instantly if you tell them what they do on that type of event, typically they'll ask you, so what do you do? And you can tell right away if you say it in a couple sentences and they clearly have tuned out, they're waiting for a gap to interrupt you to tell you what they do, because that's really what they're there for. They could not give a rat's ass about what you do. I can't say that on YouTube or on, what are we on? On iTunes. So if somebody, iTunes. Yeah, if somebody,
see,
Jesus.
See how well versed we are in social media.
See how well versed we are in social skills.
Yeah.
But so if somebody just comes up and says, what do you do? And they're looking for an opportunity to interrupt you and tell you what they do. They don't care what you do. They just want to tell you about their small business and to get you to be a customer or client in theirs. And you can spot that a mile away. So don't use that as an opportunity to say, well, let me tell you about my MLM. Just hold off. Keep asking them questions. The more you get them to talk, the more they like you.
Now, all of this revolves around being genuine. You got to be interested in people.
Mm-hmm.
You got to, you can't just do it to create conversation to go sell somebody something. Right? You people can see that. So you really have that conversation to get to know that person. Right? And here's a way to do that.
And if you're more a quiet person, watch someone who mm-hmm. you know that is more outgoing and seems very friendly, and watch what they do and how they engage somebody. And more often than not, you'll see it around these lines of FORM. They're usually doing something along those lines if you pay attention to it. It's very powerful. And they may not even know that they're doing it, but it's a very powerful way to do that, easy way to do it.
Yeah, and the recreation part, I mean, you know, you can just carry a whole conversation with that.
Yes.
Right? And sometimes you'll find very similar interests and you guys can just carry on that conversation around recreation.
Yep.
So it's just basically hobbies and activities, right? Life stuff that you like enjoying.
And all you're looking to do off this is you're building a connection with somebody. In fact, even a better way to do it is not only to ask about that and say, hey, what can I do to help you? Then you make it clearly not about you, but it's about them. What is it that you can do to help them in whatever it is that they're trying to do? And what you'll find when you do that, you'll connect with people and they'll remember you.
And yeah, if you take the approach of how can I help the other person, mm-hmm. right? Or what's in it for the other person.
Correct. Make it all about them. So that's some of the pros on MLMs. The other thing you get, kind of going back on the discussion, what are the pro-con for MLM? It gives you an opportunity to build a team of people that are doing the same thing that you are, pushing the same product, selling the same service. And with that, then you get the opportunity to develop management skills. And you're also going to, if you are going to build a team, you will quickly learn the requirement of having or developing motivational skills to keep your team motivated, because they are all volunteers. You have to be clear about that. They're not paid by the hour. They're not paid to show up. They're paid to produce. And so they volunteer to give up their free time to come participate in the MLM. And so you have to learn to motivate folks. And then also you're going to learn very quickly to become organized. If you have a challenge with organization, this is a great way to break through that barrier. Otherwise, you will get buried.
Yeah, a lot of opportunities to build, you know, management skills there, right? And the ability to motivate people to do things. I mean, that's fantastic. That's very rare too, right?
Especially at a young age.
Yeah.
Because you and they are a volunteer to be there, because you're not paid by the hour, you're not technically an employee, you've got flexibility. So you can work your own hours. So if you've got or want to work during the day, terrific. If you want to do it during the night, terrific. You just have to be able to do that when you're either clients are available or potential clients, or when your team is available. So if your team's only available after 6 p.m. and you hate working nights, you're going to have a hard time with an MLM business, right?
Yeah, I think most people approach the MLM business as a side gig or a nighttime project, or
yep.
you know, right? And then eventually when the dollars kick in, then it makes sense they can leave their daytime job.
And turn it right, into full-time.
And then turn that into full-time, correct. But usually that's the kind of the process behind somebody starting an MLM going into an MLM business.
Chris, hold that thought, because we're going to go back to that in just a minute. So if you I'll just repeat it. So if you do well enough at that, that you feel you've replaced your real job, your full-time job, and now you want to make a switch over to do that, the MLM provides that potential opportunity. Also, the nice thing about it is you are paid for performance. So unlike somebody that's paid by the hour, if you perform well, you're paid well. If you don't perform, you perish. And so it really, if you've never worked in that environment, it's a fabulous place to learn because it's pay for performance. Do well, you eat more. Don't do well, you don't eat. And that puts that to me is fun. First time you go through it, it might be scary if you're used to drawing a paycheck.
Well, and that's why we said it's an MLM is really a sales engine, right? Or sales arm. So you're really, being thrown into sales.
Yes. Yep. And with that, then it is a great source for motivation and inspiration because everybody in that organization is a volunteer. And so, and in any sales environment, sales is full of rejection. And so there always has to be motivation that's there. There has to be discipline as well. But so you're looking for inspiration, motivation. And so if you ever need a dose of that, an MLM business is a fabulous spot to find that. It is all over the place there because they need to keep people motivated. I might argue that some of the ways they motivate people might be a little questionable and not the best thing, but doesn't matter. That's a personal opinion. The other neat thing about an MLM, there's a huge focus on money. And not that money is the end all, but what I've always enjoyed or had a respect for in an MLM is they always try to get people to think bigger. So if $20 strikes you as a lot of money, that's great. And I respect that. But they want to get you to picture $50 or $100 or $1,000. And so, money, it's just this mental thing. And we all have limitations in our mind as to what is considered a lot of money. And that's just because of something that we put there. Double that number, add a zero to it, and you'll start thinking bigger. And your pipeline, if you will, and your opportunities will suddenly start to show up and show up bigger. And that applies whether you're in an MLM or not. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, most MLM talk, they focus a lot about money and how much you can make. And because of that, it does get you to think bigger, get you to think, retire early, live your dreams, right, and achieve those goals. Mm-hmm. So those are all positive on the MLM motivational side.
The other thing that's nice about it, there is minimal experience required to join. So if you can fog a mirror, most of the time they'll take you, which is both a good and a bad. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But so if you're coming into something with little to no experience, an MLM is a great place to go learn. Do that as a side hustle, as a side gig, to get the experience there. But you got to work. Just saying that, just spending your dollars for fees to join doesn't do anything. It's like buying a gym membership. You still got to go in there and do the work. And even just buying a gym membership and walking in doesn't do anything. You got to do the work. So, and then to me, probably the thing that sums up the MLM thing that I think is great is you learn to deal with rejection. And that's all about sales. It's all about trying to get an idea across to somebody. And some people are going to say no. And you learn to develop the attitude of what I always tell people, it's SW, SW, SWN, SW cubed N. Some will, some won't. So what next? And you don't take it personally.
You learn to develop that thick skin, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so it helps you build a skill set. It's really probably the pro around all of that, whether that's salesmanship or social skills or, management skills, motivational skills, etc. Chris, one of the things I was going to go back and mention, you said, as you get good at this and as you do better and better over the months and years, you may get to the point where your income from the MLM exceeds that of your job. And so you look mm-hmm. and say, let me leave my job and I'll just do the MLM. Does that mean that you've hit time freedom?
No, you still, I think you're in the S side of the triangle and on the self-employment side, right? Because it depends on you.
Yep. Have you hit financial freedom?
Yeah, you can. You definitely hit financial freedom if you're able to leave your job, because now that takes over and it pays for you.
Yep, but you're still having to work for it, right? Which I agree with you. That is not time freedom. And so it's nice you're able to leave a job, but you've switched from a corporate slave to an MLM slave, right? And now you're having to work for the MLM. You get paid for your performance, which is great. And you're having to work for your team. So now you're having to motivate your team. And so on the one hand, it's cool, because if your team performs, then you reap the benefits.
But remember, I think you actually, when you go full time, you'll find out you're going to work a lot more than you did in your employee job.
Yes. And that's not just, we've seen that. We got lots of friends that have done very well in MLM. And I have yet to see anyone that didn't work harder once they went full time there.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I started an MLM business, that was back when I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. Right? And was that almost 20 years ago or 30 years ago? And I know some of the names that are in the business.
30 years ago,
still
dude,
there.
You can't do math.
I can't. You see, I didn't realize I'm that old now.
You aged a decade on this one episode.
30 years ago.
30 plus 19 is how much?
Yeah, almost 30 years ago, Chris.
Wait, what's 30 plus 19?
39.
How much?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. 20 years ago. So I was right the first time.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. So 20 years ago, right? still the same names doing the same business.
Just for the listeners, I just got those of us who actually that know both of us. This is just so fun, because I've been getting this kind of crap from him for years, where I slip and I make mistakes. He kept saying, you know, buddy, once you get close to 40, the roles are going to turn. I'm going to have a lot of fun with you. And he's not even at 40 yet, and it's already starting. So this is cool.
Yeah, I'm not focusing on the numbers. I'm focusing on muting out
on the
baby in the background.
Focused on the process.
Yeah.
All right, so keep going. So you did this when you were 19, which was, what, 70 years ago, you said? Something like that?
Yeah, like 70 years ago, man. But anyhow, it was a large number of years. And you know, the guy's still doing... Right, who were running those businesses, they're still running it.
Yes.
Because back then I would figure, oh, these guys are on there, you know, they're financially free, and you know, I didn't know if they were retired, because you know, my definition of retirement is you can't keep on throwing your time.
Yeah, you stay at home, go do what you want to do.
Yeah. So I'm sure, you know, they enjoy it, but 30 years of the same old crap. And then I realized that as you get older, that I wouldn't enjoy that, right? And they're doing it because they have to, because if they don't, the team will die.
The team evaporates.
Yeah, the business will go away.
Yep.
And so I guess the motivation is the money, right?
And it becomes your job, so to speak, right? It is what you get up and do every day, or stay up late and do every night.
And we'll touch on more about being financially free versus having time freedom.
Yes.
You know, on a later episode, but just to point out that an MLM business typically does not give you that financial or time freedom. It gives you the financial freedom, but
yes,
not the time freedom.
It basically can potentially allow you to leave your full-time job, your existing full-time job, and you switch it to another time-intensive endeavor that might pay a lot more, which is cool. But that's not time freedom.
So there's a pro. The pro is financial freedom. The con is, you know, no time freedom.
Exactly. So some of you are probably saying, you guys are talking about building a skill set through MLM, but our goal is to get to time freedom. Why the heck are you telling us to go build a skill set? We should be working on figuring out, you know, how money moves and, you know, how to make it grow and this, that, and the other. And the reason you want to build the skill set, you want to have the know-how so that, you know, once you leave the job, you've got the money working for you, what is it that you want to do? And you're probably going to need some sort of skill set. Sales is the most common one. Team building, organization, leadership, motivating people, all those things are going to be required for whatever kind of job you end up wanting to do.
All extremely important. And I think just reflecting back when I was making my decision what to do after college, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I think you were, I mean, the only person that ever said, hey, go work for the skill and go focus on acquiring skill sets as opposed to looking for the higher pay or whatever that is paying you more.
Yeah, because I forgot about that until you just said that. Yeah, because you, when you got out of school, you'd been an intern at IBM. And did you look elsewhere? Did you go interview elsewhere at other firms?
I did not.
So you just, because IBM offered you something.
Yeah, correct. I think you said, hey, yeah, I think you shared with me the story where you were recruited by Xerox, uh-huh. I believe. You,
yep.
And then they told you, somebody there told you, hey, go to IBM because they have very good training.
Yes.
And so you left and you went to work for IBM and then you're supposed to come back and you never did.
Yeah, I mean, I was an intern in college at Xerox. I worked there for a couple of years, kind of like what you did at IBM. Mm-hmm. And Xerox offered me a job and I ended up taking, I don't know, it was probably 20, 25% less money to go work at IBM because some guy at Xerox I would have worked for actually said, you know, you ought to think about working at IBM because the training's fabulous. And I didn't know any different. And so I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. If he's telling me to go work there, that says something. And my thought was I'd work there for a few years and then go back over to Xerox. And I never did. I just
started. Yeah, so I was that was interesting. And so maybe, you know, I'm not sure if you directly told me or indirectly, but from what I got was go get the skill set. That's a lot more important. And this is why. It's really to whenever you leave whatever type of job or career you decide to do, you don't really take the money or the work that you put in. You don't really take the dollars that come along with it. You really take the skill set. And these skill sets can be applied to whatever that you're trying to do, you know, with your life's purpose.
Well, it's that, but it's the, you know, like IBM was a sales training, I guess, is what the Xerox guy was touting. Mm-hmm. And I realized later on, looking back on it, it was very easy because of the name IBM. You know, granted, the selling was challenging, but you had the company, when you called someone and said, I'm with IBM, can I speak with so-and-so? It was always, oh, hold on, one second, hold on. And they'd patch you right in. And so I never had to, the downside is I never had to learn how to get through the gatekeeper. Because more often than not, you were passed right on through. And so on the one hand, that's a nice thing. It makes it easy. On the other hand, that's a curse because you never learn how to get through that. But I didn't really think about it until you were talking about that. That selling skill and, you know, kind of the business skills that you learn early on, you're trying to get the skill. I don't think you should be as concerned about the dollars early on because you're learning the process and the how to do. And ironically, that's the same thing that we do when we learn to trade. Right, you don't worry about the money early on. You got to learn the process.
Actually, I think you shouldn't worry about the money. It will come if you just worry about building the skill set.
That's exactly it. But as you've seen, you know, people hear about trading. Oh my gosh, it's really, you know, the money comes really fast, and they don't realize it also goes really fast too.
Yep.
And so, but people are focused on the dollars as opposed to the process. Yeah. And it's the same thing in career.
Yeah, you mentioned about, hey, there's a guy that was ahead of you and he was concerned that when they were having layoffs, like what he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you acquire the skill sets, what are you worried about?
Correct.
You can always get a job. That's right. That's a given.
Correct. Especially if you have a generic sales background.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've yet to find a company that says, no, we don't need more sales.
And let's take a step back and really look at sales. And I mean, you mentioned it to me and it made a whole lot of sense when I looked at, you know, what are those important skill sets that employers or people look for? And communication sales, huge, right? That, who doesn't need that? Every company, if you're an employer, you think about it when you provide a product or a service, somebody's got to sell it.
Yes.
So typically that's the last piece to go when your business is not doing well.
Yes.
And you still got to sell. So you need people to sell for you.
Yeah, you're reducing staff overhead. The last thing you want to reduce is the sales staff.
So sales is extremely important. It's wanted pretty much in any industry. And finance is the other one. As you know numbers, you know how money works because it's related to the business.
Yes.
So if you understand that well, there's a lot of, you're valuable to the company. you know, countless times when you were in sales at IBM, a lot of people just wanted to make the sell because they don't understand the numbers behind it. Sometimes they'll take a loss just to get the revenue. But if you, from a running a business, you want the person to understand what goes into those sales numbers.
Correct.
You can't just go and offer a deal just to get, you know, some revenue recognition when it makes no sense for the company to sell that, mm-hmm. right, at that value or that price.
Correct.
Yeah. So I think understanding the numbers and you know, having some finance background is extremely helpful as well, or very valuable in the, you know, just for you to be able to get jobs or start your own business, right? Those things are going to be required.
If you think, you know, if you were to lose everything, right, you do a foolish trade or something goes south and you lost everything tomorrow. I use this with people all the time. It's like, well, I would grovel and beg, and I'd be trying to get back into IBM or someplace, go find a sales job where I had a little bit of flexibility in my day. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'd work for X number of months to, you know, cover the bills and build up a little bit of a bankroll. And then I would figure out how to almost day trade during the day. Staying on the West Coast, I could do it early. You know, catch a few trades early, you know, most weeks, and build it up. And with that selling skill, if you will, it'd be easy to find a job. Doesn't have to be the highest paid one, just something that gives me the flexibility and the time that I want. And then with the know how to make money work skill, it wouldn't be long before I think I would be unemployed again by choice.
And that's a cool position to be
that's
in.
That's awesome to be in, right? Yeah. I mean, that is truly ultimate freedom. But that comes from, you know, having the, you know, the finance background, or, you know, and that was just self-taught. That wasn't done through school. And the sales skills, that was just done through on-the-job training. And then learning the stock market, and that was done on nights and weekends. But once you have that, you're set, right? Not worried about something going south. If it happens, it would suck, stink, I guess, whatever word you're supposed to use on iTunes to be able to claim clean words. But it would, a word that rhymes with duck, suck. But once, all right. You'd suck it up and then go get a job, build up some capital to trade and start all over again. And I'd be totally fine. And that is incredibly liberating. And that's the kind of thing that I hope the listeners pick up on and say, that's what you want to get to.
Yeah. When I connected the dots, right. When you told me about the skill sets, and I think after a few years in sales at IBM and, you know, just kind of getting the skill, the sales background, it made me feel a lot more comfortable and confident about, you didn't care about the job anymore, meaning, you know, you can get any of those sales jobs out there.
Yes. Yep. Right?
There was no fear of losing a job, no fear of, hey, where would I, you know, find employment? Mm-hmm. Employment was easy. It's not a tough thing.
Yes. Right? It doesn't mean, it may not be the highest paid job, but you can find something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can always find something. Right. And it makes it a lot easier to work when you understand that you're not being forced to work here.
It's a means to an end.
Yep. It's a means to an end. It's not, this is my only choice.
And that goes back to, that's freedom. That doesn't, mm-hmm. That's emotional freedom.
Yeah.
And then you got to figure out how to get to the time freedom.
And so with these skill sets, I think what stood out a lot, you're a great example of that, Chris, is, you carry these skill sets into retirement, or into when you have time freedom, you get to apply them. And I've always saw you as a very, very good teacher. And I think everybody else would agree that I have worked around you or with you at IBM. And I think, you know, you just never followed that passion, or I guess that calling.
Well, they don't make enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe that was why.
Yeah. It's like, yuck.
Right. And now, you know, after Chris left IBM, he just, you know, a lot of people said, hey, teach me stuff. And so what's neat is to see you fulfill that. And it just goes right, you know, with what you love to do. And it shows as well, because, you know, the people that are around you and that are learning from you, they get it. You know, they're appreciative of the work and the time that you put in for that. And I think you make a big difference. I think, and you know, my firsthand experience is with me. Right? You were teaching me, So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. And, it, you know, that's a little bit on the teacher. That's a hell of a lot more on the student. But it is, it kind of does point back to, if you do what you love, it's not work, right? It's fun to do. And if you're good, and like you said, I appreciate the comments and the feedback. And it's awesome. I mean, I'd rather hear that than the opposite. It is a little embarrassing when you say that, but if you look at it, you know, deep down, I know I can take really complex stuff and make it simple and explain it to people and they get it. And so to be able to use that in something that you love to do in my quote unquote free time, now that, you know, I've got spend a little bit of time on the trading every day, but there's still a lot of hours left in the day. And you think, all right, how are you going to use, you know, how do you want to spend your time? And it's cool to be able to do something that you love, that people need and appreciate and want. And ironically, I mean, it's kind of cool. They pay you for it. I run a class every now and then, and I still pinch myself. You know, I walk in there and go, wow, I got a, you know, a whole bunch of people here in the room wanting to listen to what I say. It's basically me just stepping through what I love doing, and people are paying me to sit and listen to it. It's the weirdest thing. I mean, it's the coolest thing. Talk about a blessed life. But you're just, you know, imagine if, you know, some, it's like a sportscaster, if they love talking about sports and somebody pays them to sit there and talk about sports. I mean, what an awesome gig.
So, hey, I don't want to compare you to Charles Barkley on TNT, you know?
Yeah, no, he's got to lose 50 pounds. I could lose about 15. So we're, I mean, he's much more outspoken than I am.
Yeah, but you know, for the most listeners, they think you're natural at it, and it was easy for you to just transition to it, but it's not.
You got to learn.
I think when most people say, hey, somebody's natural at it, they didn't realize that they weren't born with it.
No.
And you've gone through a lot of training, I guess, whether you know it or not, that just happens to you built the skill sets around connecting and teaching people.
I can remember walking into a career day at a high school in Santa Ana, California. It was one of my first times that I did it. And I got a bunch of, inner city is probably a little too much of a stretch, but it certainly is a rough neighborhood that we were in. And here I'm, you know, you get this white guy with a bunch of basically Hispanic immigrants. It was probably 90% Hispanic, maybe 8 to 10% black. And that's pretty much it. So just probably 100% minority school. And here's this, you know, 25, 30-year-old white guy walking in there wearing a suit talking about what it's going to be like to work for IBM. And I absolutely fell on my sword. I was a total doofus. Couldn't get their attention, couldn't do anything. And I remember walking out thinking, I'm never going to fail that bad again. And so, you know, you got to be willing to screw up a couple times and embarrass yourself. And
there's then go the back don't and quit do it attitude, again. Right?
That's exactly it. Yeah. You think, man, that's, you know, thank God I didn't have anybody else looking at me other than a bunch of high school seniors. But had there been a coworker in there, I'd have been the laughing stock because I just was stumbling all over myself. But you try it again. You try it again. Eventually, you figure it out.
If you were the laughing stock, you might be even a better teacher.
Yeah. And who knows? That's exactly it. You learn. But you got to learn. You know, you kind of have to fail forward. Mm-hmm. Is the way you think about that. And so kind of back to the MLM stuff, that gives you the opportunity to do that. Don't look at it as a failure. You look at it as you learn something that doesn't work. And now try something else, and now try something else. And so, you know, just through sheer stubbornness or stupidity, you eventually figure out, well, I've tried these 100 things. I failed 99 times. Maybe this one will work, and that'll be the one that works.
Yeah, and I say that the skill-building part is so important that a lot of time it's being mislooked, and then people tend to focus on the money. And if you didn't acquire the teaching, the skills to teach, who knows? You might have not. Teaching might have not, you know, been what you were going to do, but correct. Because you made it available, I think it, like that whole law of attraction. If because you acquired these skills, right, the opportunities come to you, and because the opportunities could come and you weren't confident in teaching, it's like, all right, then you wouldn't pursue something that, hey, you would have really, really loved.
Or, yes. Yeah.
You would totally miss that opportunity.
I'd be a professional surfer right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not very good, so I'd have to try 100 times to figure out what didn't work.
I did remember you going out with your longboard a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, spent a little time on there. So one of the things too, you know, we're talking about what we both learned in going through this by, you know, building up those various skills, the salesmanship, the, you know, how to motivate others, organizing that type of stuff. I can remember you more than once, you'd been at IBM probably about 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years, and you were out in Dallas and you'd call up and you know, I don't know how you did it because you worked in a big cubicle area, but you'd be whining to me about the crap that they made you go through. And you're like, dude, can I just leave? It's kind of like your father. Can I just leave? This place is horrible. I got to go through all this drama. You know, and you can probably tell the story much better than I can. You got to go sell a bazillion dollars worth of stuff to get a $50 Starbucks card. And it's just not motivating at all. And then I think we talked about this in the one of the intro podcasts, you know, where you're pushing hundreds of thousands of dollars on a trade while you're working, sitting there, you know, you got it on one screen and the boss comes in and sits down and he's talking about a, you know, a $50 or $100 bonus opportunity. And you're mm-hmm. thinking, you know, if this trade goes right, I'm going to make thousands of dollars here in just a few minutes. Get out of my office or get out of my desk. And it does get to that point where you have to think about, you know, why are you at the job? And I remember I was telling you more than once, stick it out, because if your objective ultimately is to maybe start your own company or whatever it is that you want to do, mm-hmm. ultimately you're going to have to learn how to sell.
Yep.
And you might as well learn on somebody else's dime so that when you goof up, it doesn't harm your company. You know, if you, in the sales that we both were doing, wasn't uncommon to have a 6-figure sale, 7-figure. I think I even did a couple of 8-figure deals over the years. So, you know, it's a very large, you know, high-end corporate clients and big ticket items. And, you know, let's say you're chasing $1 million sale for something. Somebody wants to buy, you know, a bazillion computers and storage and services, whatever else they're buying. And you lose, right? The customer decides to go with HP or whatever the competitor was. And, you know, so let's say it's $1 million sale. Well, when in a big company like that, you're going to take a little bit of grief at the local level for having lost the deal. But when the earnings call comes out that quarter, and IBM announces they did whatever the number is, $25 billion in sales that quarter. And they'll say 25.2. And they don't say 25.236, right? Because that point, that six down at the end, that was your $1 million deal. You're not even a rounding error. You don't even show up. And so whether they did 25.236 or 25.237, it didn't matter. And the cool thing about that is, granted, you're not paid as well as you might have been at a small firm, but you're learning the skill set. And then you take that skill set wherever you want to go. And so to me, it was a great opportunity to learn. I may have foregone greater earnings than I could have made elsewhere.
Yeah, well, there's no risk really to your own.
No,
you
know? Nope, yeah. Not at all.
Dollars.
But then with that, it gave me the ability and the time to go learn how to manage my own business, right? And mind my own business. And then ultimately, that allowed me to walk away from the workforce. And so there actually is a huge benefit in doing that.
So that was great advice, by the way. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
But anyway, at the time, it was tough to understand. You.
Yeah, but you look back on it. And we talked about this in the last episode. You know, when you have two choices, and one is easy and one is hard, right? The easy choice would have been for you to walk away from IBM. I mean, you could have left IBM, what, probably 4 or 5 years sooner than you did.
Yeah, a few years, I think it was the, you know, because I was in the office environment, right? Mm-hmm. A lot more when I was over in Dallas.
Yes.
And so, you know, in that office environment, it's you tend to see stuff you saw from Office Space, right?
Oh, the show The Office, yep.
Right. Yep. You see cubicles, you see, you know, sales rally meetings, and you know, people get in circles on Fridays, and each team would get together and, you know, congratulate, you know, this person for hitting the bonus of the week or the day, yep, or whatever contest they're doing. And like you said, it was just kind of, you know, to me, it was just everybody was, or people, you know, managers are trying to motivate salespeople with $25 Starbucks cards.
Yeah. And you're looking at it going, dude, I made 50 times that in the last half hour on a trade.
Yeah. And then you got people kind of, you know, playing the politics and, you know, fighting over stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really about, hey, let me pretend to, you know, to show you what I can do or what I'm doing, right? And let me go and fight for this promotion or this raise or this contest, right? And there was no one really, you know, truly in it to build skills or try to help others. And it was kind of like it's dog-eat-dog world in a little small office.
Yep, right? Yep.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is, right, you stuck around and you learned the business skills, right? The salesman, mm-hmm. the salesmanship, the kind of the organizational stuff and all the stuff that you hope to get out of that. And mm-hmm. at the same time, we're building up your own nest egg and learning how to trade. Such when you walk, you know, it's a cool thing to send out an I'm retiring email when you're about 30.
And yeah.
That's a very, very, very cool thing. But if you think about it too, by sticking around for those extra few years, that really didn't keep you from doing anything that you ultimately wanted to do.
No, it didn't. It didn't at all.
Yeah, I remember saying to you, it's like, dude, what is a 27-year-old retiree going to do? You know?
Yeah, and we talked about, or we'll talk about it in a future episode, about the whole retirement thing. And I never understood it, right? And didn't understand it the way I do it today. And there wasn't a lot of hope. Planning that went along with it at that time. It was just more of an emotional reaction to, you know, I didn't want to be in that environment.
I'm of the opinion, you know, we probably shouldn't use the word retire. It actually should be I think they came up with rewire, right? And you wire yourself to do something different. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're working in corporate America, cool. You say, I want to leave that, good. You rewire yourself to go do something else. But you only do that once you have the means to do so. So let's go back to the MLM stuff. So we talked about the pro side of it. On the con side of it, it is a selling environment and you're always out, you know, trying to either sell the product or service and or trying to recruit somebody to join the business, which means in doing that, you're going to get rejected a lot. The nice thing about that is you learn to take the rejection. It's not directed at you personally. And if it is, just make it, you know, point it to the company or point it to the product. So you have to learn to not take it personally when somebody says no. That also results in a very high turnover rate in most MLM businesses. And so you have to be prepared if you're building up a team. If they get distracted, sidetracked, whatever else, they're all volunteers showing up every day. And so your team can go bye-bye. Which means your income suddenly has a dramatic hit on it.
Yeah, because everybody's running on motivation. And so when the motivation dies out because you hear a lot of rejections, they tend to, you know, the activity slows down as well. So you're going to see a high turnover rate in that field or the MLM business.
And we talked about that before, right? It's motivation over discipline. You have to be disciplined. The motivation wears out very quickly. It's the discipline that keeps you going through plug along, rowing the boat, right? You definitely need the discipline to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, despite the fact that you keep getting rejected.
So some of these cons are we saw as pros as well.
Yeah, you can totally, it all goes back to how to think. You can view it as a negative or you can view the positive side of it. The other con, you know, we talked before about the pro being the minimal experience to join an MLM. That actually is a con. Too, because you think about that minimal experience, if you get a bonehead, I'm not saying all people in MLM are, but you're going to get a few just like you get in any business. You get a bonehead, that's who you're going to be working with. And because there's almost no barrier to entry, you have to be aware that you might be working with people that qualify for no barriers to entry.
Yeah, there's no filters or qualifiers for these people joining MLM. So you tend to get anybody and everybody, and so with that you're going to get people with very little experience. We talk about those skill sets to build, right? These are the people coming in without those skill sets.
Correct.
Yep.
And the way to think about that too is, I remember reading, I think it was Sandberg, Sheryl Sandberg from Facebook, was talking or was being interviewed about going to work for Zuckerberg. One of the things, I think it was her, I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about when you're looking to hire somebody, the thing you want to look for is not just are they smarter than you, they bring something to the table. it's really two things, right? It's, do they bring something to the table? And more so, would you be willing to work for them? You might be hiring them to come work for you, but you have to look at it and say, would you be willing to work for them? And not from the standpoint of you plan to promote them above you. It's just that if they bring that type of skill set or personal skills, that's the type of person you want to work with. And so you want to think about that in the MLM. Take a look around at the people that would be on your team. And is that something that you can make a go with? Because that's who's going to end up helping you the most or hindering you. It's going to fall on you, but you want to be sure that your support structure is strong.
Yeah, that's so important to understand. I think in my early experience with MLM, I don't remember, any MLM that tries to preach who to recruit. They really just say recruit anybody. If they're breathing, they got to.
If they can fog a mirror, bring them in.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you got a Social Security, recruit them.
And so the other con on the MLM is they focus on the money. Right, they're always selling the dream. Hey, come do this, and the pictures of the big, beautiful homes, the boats, the trips, the nice cars, all that stuff. And
yeah, they don't focus on the product.
No, very, very, very few people, few firms do that. They're always selling the dream. Selling the dream works a little bit, but you got to be able to sell something. So there's still got to be a product that you can sell. And so whether you're selling, financial services or skincare or vitamin supplements or whatever it might be, you got to have a product that you can sell. And so you want to be sure that the product that you're getting behind is a product that that you're comfortable, you believe in it.
Yeah, and you're basically evaluating the business, and MLM is just a marketing arm, we said. And so you still have to sell a product or a service. So when you look at a business, what is it providing from a product or services standpoint? And so, because you're still going to compete in the marketplace. And yes, a lot of times when you're approached by somebody in MLM, they really just talk to you about money and how much you can make if you did this or that. And you would say, what do you sell? And that's never clear.
No, they're selling the dream.
Yeah. Because typically they're not focusing on the product. They're just trying to get you to jump in and just do the system and recruit.
Can you imagine thinking of going out to, you have to go apply for a job. And so you go through LinkedIn or whatever job search service you use to find an opening, and you go out, send out your resume, and they call you in for an interview. Can you imagine the first thing them saying to you is, hey, Chris, we really want you to come join us because if you work here at ABC Corp, you're going to get rich. You say, oh, well, what do I do? Nah, don't worry about that. You just do what we tell you, you're going to get rich. And, a typical company doesn't walk in with that. They want to be sure that you're a good fit, you've got the skill set, et cetera, et cetera. But you walk into an MLM, and that's usually the first words that you hear. When you hear that, radar should go up. Not saying it's bad, but just have your radar up.
Yeah, that's just a different way to think or how to think part.
Yes.
Because if you apply the same process in the MLM business, then you would be successful as well. In a real business, you don't just hire anyone. So in the MLM business, it's the same way. You don't just hire anyone.
I just thought about this as we're talking. You could apply that same concept to real estate. Hey, Chris, if you do the real estate thing, you're going to get rich. Don't talk about how you're going to do it. You're just going to get rich.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, you do the stock market, you're going to get rich. And instantly your guard would be like, well, what do I need to do? Don't worry about it. We'll tell you, you're going to get rich.
Yeah.
I mean, your skepticism would be through the roof.
Well, that's all the infomercial.
Yes, that's it.
Late night infomercials talking about learning something or trading the stock market or the real estate market. They're always selling the dream and selling you the money.
Yep.
Focus on the money.
So
that's a con. That's
definitely a con. It's when you hear that, just have your guard up. Not to say that it can happen, but have your guard up. The other thing you'll find in MLM, there are a lot of people that make good money doing this. But if you look at the amount of time that they spend doing this, it's oftentimes well beyond that of a full-time job.
Right? And usually I found the people that make good money or do very, very well, highly successful in the MLM business, they're typically, they either started the MLM or they joined the MLM
early,
in its early
yes.
In its early beginnings.
Yep. there's I can think of a few people. You were involved in an MLM in, you know, just out of high school into college, and that business is still going strong. They are growing. And the people that may have recruited you might still be there, and they're doing well.
They're still, yeah. Like I told you, some of the executives that I remember were around at the time that I joined. Mm-hmm. They're still there,
and some of them are making millions a year,
mm-hmm.
right? Making huge money, but yep. Man, they're always working, and so they may have financial freedom. They do not have anything close to time freedom. We've got a couple of mutual friends that are involved in that business, as well as trading the stock market. And in their involvement there, they see it, right? The people that are, you know, near the top of the chain or, you know, doing incredibly well, they put in a ton of hours. And the time is spent, a huge amount of time is spent in managing the downline, basically the people on their team. And they got to keep them motivated all the time.
Yeah, I have a friend that I went to elementary school with, and he connected with me in college, or he reached out to me. I think when we were in college, he didn't go to the same school. Actually, he didn't even go to college. He joined the MLM business and reached out to me and tried to recruit me for an MLM business. So totally different one than the one I had experience with. But I think probably about 5-6 years ago when we reconnected, just kind of catch up what you're doing. He's all the way in, out in the East Coast, and he's been hopping from state to state, and he's still, you know, in the MLM business, and it kind of morphed into other things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then he started creating his own MLM, and because he was just running out of, because again, most MLMs, they don't focus on the product or the service. So it's hard to sustain and compete in the marketplace when you're just a sales arm and you're not really focusing on competing with your products or service. So
correct.
Eventually, he needed to go elsewhere, a new location, to get people to join. And so he's all over the country, moving around, running this MLM business. And so he's constantly, he has to chase new business, new recruits, right? Because people come and go.
It's never time
the moment
freedom.
That he stops, yeah, the moment he stops, it's going
to
die.
The income dries up.
Correct.
Now, it doesn't mean it goes to zero. It could go to zero, but you know, you're probably going to still get some stream. But it certainly isn't at the level that you were accustomed to when you were working it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a non-sustaining model.
When you see him, he's always, you know, he's got his pictures always in like fancy suits, and you know, he's standing next to a nice car, and
yep.
You know, that's the type of marketing.
Correct, but that's selling the dream.
Yeah, that's selling the dream. And you and I understand that the dream is better in shorts and t-shirts.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
Yeah.
I mean, people laugh, right? When I teach a class, I'm standing, I walk in shorts and a t-shirt. And it's not selling the dream. It's like, it's the way I dress. I'm not going to show up in a suit.
You should let people be surprised by that.
Oh, well, I just ruined it. Maybe I'll edit that out.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It is pretty funny, though. I think I get a lot of comments from people that, expect, here's a guy, you know, because people don't know what they're coming into when they go show up to your class. They think it's some type of seminar or something.
Uh-huh.
Right. Expect, you know, people maybe selling you stuff at the front door, or, might be securities around, and, you know, you're in a black suit or something like that.
Yeah. They think I'm the road guy. I'm the roadie guy setting up the, the microphone and the PC.
Yeah.
Then I start talking like, what? Who's that? It must be the guy doing the mic check. But his voice sounds
not even
familiar.
The roadie guy. I think the roadie guy dresses better.
Yeah, he probably does.
Yeah, every time you come in, it's like, oh, yeah, that's me. That's probably just his, bed clothes or something. I was like, oh, no, he's teaching in that.
He has to go upstairs and change. It's like, oh, no, that's his outfit. That's his clean T-shirt.
Yeah, he will comb his hair, though.
Yeah, exactly. And teeth are brushed, and everything's gone. I shave, so it looks good.
So nice to be, having the time freedom.
That's the beauty of time freedom, right?
Yeah.
You don't care. You're out there to deliver the message. If somebody doesn't, if somebody really focuses on how you dress, they're in the wrong spot. It's all about the content.
Yeah, a fancy suit doesn't make you trade better.
Nope, not at all. There's a saying out of Texas, big hat, no cattle.
Mm-hmm. Right,
you get these guys that wear big cowboy hats, and they've got about a dime in the bank. So let's see. So the types of MLMs that we've looked at that this could apply to, and if you're in an MLM and doing great, and what we've said is almost offensive because your business is not that way, don't worry about it. You've seen others that are, and those are the ones that we've run into. And it's, again, we're not putting it down. We're not boosting it up. We're just telling it like it is and from our experience.
Oh, this is not to say MLM business is bad. That's why we're looking at the pros and cons.
There's
it's really to help somebody who doesn't understand what an MLM business is and how to, you know, benefit from it. This is to share that information so you can make that decision when you are approached with an MLM business. I always tell young individuals to go join an MLM, you know, or people who are looking for jobs, they're in between jobs, and they don't know what to do. Right? Join an MLM business.
You know,
especially if you don't have sales skills.
Exactly. Well, the types of MLMs we've seen, at least that I've seen those that sell vitamins and supplements. There's one that sells some kind of coffee. I can't remember what it's called. Doesn't matter. There's another one that a lot of high school and college kids get into that sells kitchen cutlery. Very high-end, like knives and stuff like that. There's other ones that I've seen that sell skincare and cosmetics, household goods, almost like an Amway. Most people are familiar with that. And there's financial services firms. So, you know, they're selling either insurance and or investments.
Telecom.
Then there's telecom services where they might be selling, you know, internet access and or cell phone and or, I think there's even one that does like electric utilities. Remember, mm-hmm. I've heard about something like that. I haven't seen it out here in California. I think it exists on the East Coast.
But yeah, basically just a middleman for any type of products or services that's out there. So don't be surprised, right?
There's all kinds of things out there.
Yeah, they get creative.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And so, you know, I've had good experiences with them and I've had bad experiences with them. You've had the same. I think you just worked in one. I've looked at a few, got involved with one. And it went fine, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do.
I was involved with one, but I understand many out there and was, you know, a lot of people try to recruit you for others too. And I think having that experience allowed me to make that decision much better.
I would say with all those that are out there and the stuff that I've seen and that I've heard people talk about that are in the MLM business, something to watch out for. If it seems that the MLM is making a lot of money off of your, for lack of a better word, entrance fee, you know, if the entrance fee is excessive, think twice. Not saying it's good or bad, but just look at it with a cautious eye. Because what you want to be sure is that the people above you are making money off of the ongoing product sales and not off you paying the few hundred dollars or whatever it would be to join the business. Right. You want to be sure that, you know, a good chunk of your income, or be aware if a good chunk of your potential income is based on the next guy's membership fee. That's almost a pyramid scheme. Right. If you see that, think twice.
Yeah, I think I was approached by an MLM business that did that. When I joined, I got to pay a membership fee. And that membership fee was a little excessive as far as there wasn't anything that it was justifiable for that fee. And in fact, that fee, you know, goes to the pocket of whoever recruited you. And it gets passed on, right, to, you know, upwards.
Yes.
And so that's truly a pyramid when no product or services is really being, right, delivered other than you joining, right? That's a true pyramid. It's just moving money around.
And then you have
to, right? So be careful.
You can watch out on the people say, well, we'll pay you a commission when you sell the product. You want to take a look and say, how much commission is actually being paid on the sale of that product? Mm-hmm. And if it's a really, really, really small amount, give second thought to that, right? Because that says that, true, they are paying you a commission based on the product sales. But if it's incredibly small, heads up, right? Something to take a look at twice. Also, as you join one of these, you can expect you're going to have to spend some dollars on travel because you're going to have to go to lots of motivational events and team meetings and whatever else. You'll end up spending a lot of time in team meetings where you're getting, you know, how to recruit knowledge, how to sell knowledge. You're going to hopefully get some product knowledge and a lot of motivation and inspiration.
And this is all actually very good. But if you didn't expect that, right, some people don't have it ready and they're like, hey, I can't spend money doing this. And if you don't spend money doing that, it might be tough to succeed. And just as in any business, when you start up, you got to put out some capital.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing in that you really are just a sales arm but it's sold as you're running your own business.
Mm-hmm.
And in running your own business, you're going to have costs that you incur that aren't reimbursed. And so it's the travel cost, it's the time cost and going to meetings, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, remember, you are in the business of motivating because you're running a sales group. So, you know, money needs to be spent for that. I mean, the good thing is in an MLM business, a lot of the pieces are typically in place when you join.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the dollars that you spend are just kind of extra, like travel dollars and stuff. But usually somebody has an office for you. They have resources. You know, training is already paid for, usually by, you know, the team that recruits you.
Correct.
Right? They have a system in place. So it's not like, hey, you got to come up with all these things on your own. So that's a benefit.
There is huge. And they'll tell you what to do. Here's the, you know, go find mm-hmm. this many people, go bring this many people in, and it just becomes a numbers game.
Yeah, it's almost like, hey, I'm selling you a franchise, right, of this, you know, sales business or this marketing business. And you're not paying, you know, the franchise fees is typically very low, and mm-hmm. you get all these training that goes with it. But expect very little dollars in return early on, just because, you know, Chris mentioned when you sell something, there's typically a commission or a, right, that comes out of that sale. And in any company that you work for, let's say they give you 100% of that commission. In an MLM, that 100% is being divided, right, amongst the people that are on top of you. They call them your upline, people that recruited you and those people that recruited them, right, all the way from you and above.
Yep.
So you got to share that commission. Now, if you're not cool with that, then don't join an MLM, right? If your focus is only to go sell, join a company that sells the product you want to sell so you can get 100% of the commission.
But keep in mind, though, Chris, even when you, if you were to go join a non-MLM, go join an IBM, as an example, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. get into sales.
Sure.
Well, when you sell the product, you know, you make a commission off of selling the product or whatever it is that you sold. But mm-hmm. you realize your boss gets paid, too. Your boss
of
is
course.
On a sales commission.
Of
and
course.
So is their boss, and so is her boss, and her boss, and his boss. Mm-hmm. Right? And it goes all the way up to the CEO.
Yep.
And so I've had people say, well, you know, real companies don't share the commissions all the way up the chain. It's like, the hell they don't.
Yeah, it's the same way.
It's exactly the same. And so,
yeah, it's the same way. Well, the breakdown, it's still, you know, if I were to sell, you know, a server at IBM, right? IBM's going to pay me this 100% after paying everybody else. Now, if you were to sell that same server for IBM through an MLM company, IBM will pay, after paying everyone else, they're going to still pay you that amount. Now, that amount gets passed on in the MLM business to your upline.
Yes.
So it gets diluted. That's what I'm really saying.
I understand.
Right? It gets even more diluted. Just like if you sold an insurance contract, right? Here's your commission. Right? The ABC insurance company would pay you this full amount. But if you were in MLM business selling that same insurance contract for that insurance, they will give you that same amount, but it doesn't all go to you, right? It gets passed up to,
correct,
right, the people above you in the MLM business.
And
so my point is, right, that's not wrong or right. That's actually good in the MLM business because that's how it motivates you to build a team so you can make dollars off of others' effort.
Correct. I'll say at IBM, right, you and I could not have gone out and hired 5 sales reps.
No, we couldn't
and
do
taken
that.
A it cut would, was not allowed. But you could do
we
that.
We could illegally, right?
Well, yeah. But once they found out, you'd have been fired.
Yeah.
But you could do that in an MLM, right? So mm-hmm. build your own little sales team and have them go out and work, and then you get an override on what they produce. You yep. can't do that in corporate America.
And that's the magic of the MLM business, and that's why people focus so much on, hey, go recruit people, right? It's to the point that they just, you know, people forget, just recruit anyone. It's,
yes.
You don't recruit anyone. You want to recruit people, but recruit
quality
people. Just as in a normal business, you want to bring in quality people to your business.
I think a way to think about that, you know, if you're going to, when you recruit somebody, take a good hard look at that person and say, would you personally be willing to pay that person out of your pocket to work in your business?
Mm-hmm.
And if the answer is no, are you sure you want them on your team?
And when I joined the MLM business, I was 19. I mean, who the hell recruited me?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then I built a really good sizable team, and we're in financial services. So, you know, what am I doing recruiting all these guys around my age?
Correct.
Right, 20 years old, 21 years old.
And all of your friends had, you know, $500 in their pocket. It's not really what you want to see for financial services. And a 19-year-old usually doesn't need life insurance.
Yeah, they had a hard time coming up with a few hundred bucks to get licensed, right?
Yes.
And the funny thing is nobody told me, hey, don't recruit these people, right? Because if they told me that, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Right, but I think they were interested in, hey, have you recruited these guys? They would become clients. They would sign up for products, or their families would sign up for products. Right, the focus was definitely wrong. The focus needs to be recruit the right people, right, and then sell the products to the people that you know, it makes sense for them. There's a fit. So you still treat it like a business, and you still got to have that long term perspective. Otherwise, the business is not sustainable, and then you will quit.
And it ties back on your team, too, is that it's the same thing. We talked about this in the last episode. You got to have three characteristics, and you want to have those characteristics on your team, right? You want to see that your teammate, the person that you would, quote unquote, hire, be willing to pay to work in your business, they've got a strong work ethic. They're able to follow instructions, and they've got a don't quit attitude. And if you can build a team that has that, those traits individually, in an MLM business, you're going to do well. It's hard to find those people. But when you find them, that's when those people usually don't need motivation.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the MLM, my best experience was in an MLM growing up. That allowed me to get my job at IBM and other jobs if I wanted to get it.
Because you had no fear of going up and talking to somebody.
Exactly, but also I was able to, you know, I think I was only, you know, I joined an internship company that, you know, sends our resume out to a bunch of corporate employers or mm-hmm. corporate sponsors, right? They know that these are individuals that have been trained, or at least they're you know, they have a certain standard, right, of selecting internship candidates. And so these companies, they know that, hey, if I go to this company to get these interns, at least they qualify for what we're looking for. And so all of these interns were sending out their resumes to companies, just various companies, could be from financial institutions, could be from technology, could be from insurance, or, you know, any could be retail. But none of them, I didn't remember anybody else being in sales. Oh, everybody was it was like finance, accounting.
The back office stuff.
Yeah, back office stuff, engineering, a lot of software related stuff if it's technology. But nobody in sales. I didn't meet anybody else in sales, and I was the only one in sales.
Interesting.
I met a few other IBMers that, you know, joined with me as an intern, and came from the same group, right? And those guys were all, you know, on the technical side.
Interesting.
Yeah, nobody did sales. So, and because my experience at the MLM allowed me to continue that route, you know, with going towards sales, it was easy for me to get, you know, sales positions.
So that's a good point. So if somebody's listening and they're young, right, at that age where they'd be looking for an internship, it's probably not a very crowded field if you go try and get an internship in a sales organization. Doesn't mean an MLM, you know, go chase down IBM in a sales organization, or Xerox, or, you know, whatever firm you're going to go work for. Because most people on the internship, they tend to look on the back office stuff.
Yeah, at that age, everyone's afraid to sell.
Sales has dirty word. Yeah. It's a four-letter word. Yeah. People don't want to do that.
And so it's not extremely, not competitive at all, at least at, you know, at that age, you're looking for, you know, internships in sales.
I think my internship at Xerox was in the sales office. I had the same experience. I was the only guy there, or the only college student there.
And I wouldn't trade positions at all at the time.
No way.
I mean, I look at the other guys, they were always having to justify their hours going into work, right? And they're sitting behind some cubicle and, you know, they're just crunching stuff, right? And I you know, being in the sales group at IBM, I got to work with so many different groups in different product lines and service lines. I got to go out in sales calls. I was, you know, mobile, meaning I worked from home. You know, I had my own laptop. it was just a lot of flexibility, and you know, you're being given a lot of freedom. Opportunity to learn, not just, you know, being told what to do.
Correct.
It allow you to think freely.
I don't know if I ever shared with you when I was at Xerox, I was given tasks, and yeah, I had to show up to however many days a week I had to show up, but they didn't care when I got the work done. And so what I learned one time was, hey, if I go in, and I had to clock in at the time as an intern. So if I went in and did my work on a Saturday, I got paid time and a half, even if I hadn't worked a full 40 hours. And if I went in and did it on Sunday, I got paid double time. And so I would go in on Saturday. I would definitely go in on Sunday and put in about 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Almost every Sunday, just, and sometimes even 8 hours. And I'd try and get, you know, all the task stuff done where I didn't need to relate with people. And then on the time when I went into the office, then it was all about not the socializing, but it was more the interpersonal stuff. And so I think I took a pay cut my first year at IBM because of the bulk of overtime hours I'd collected from Xerox. I think I actually made more as a college intern my senior year than I did working full time. It's all about how to think.
So. Yeah, I mean, you know, a buddy of mine that told me about that internship program he was making, I think they were paying him like $17.50 an hour, I think. And this was like in 1999 or something like that.
That's good money.
Yeah, as an intern.
Yes.
Right, paying you to, they're training you, right? You're a freshman in college. And, you know, they're paying him $17.50 an hour to teach him how to be an engineer, you know, and everybody else was bragging that, either, you know, they're making $8-9 an hour somewhere else selling something, yes. Fast food or something.
In summary, we took a deep dive into the MLM side of it. I suppose I should back up. Chris, is there anything else we want to cover?
Regarding the MLM business?
Yes. I think we've hit it.
I think, you know, we talked about the pros and cons. And really taking a deep dive to, you know, fully understand what an MLM business is, what to look out for, basically sharing our experience. Because if you haven't been approached by an MLM business, you will at some point.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you got kids, teach them this stuff.
Yes.
Right? Because when they get to that age, they will be approached by it. And, you know, if I had this information when I first made the decision to join MLM, number one, I would probably get a lot more out of it, right? If I knew what I was doing at the time. Also, if there's, you know, an MLM business that doesn't make sense for me, I would know that right away.
Yeah, you can spot it. So yeah. That's why we thought it was definitely worth taking a deep dive into this. If you live in an urban area, I'd be shocked if you have not been approached or if somebody hasn't eyeballed you to approach you. And so it definitely is helpful, I think, to have this knowledge. And like you said, if I had known these things when I had kicked around in an MLM, I might not have chosen the one that I did. I might have chosen the one they did, but I had no idea. I walked in there blind. It's definitely worth understanding. And it really is another form of self-employment.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to understand, it is not passive.
Yeah.
You know, you can get paid for other people's efforts, but you still have to put in a lot of effort to get paid for other people's efforts.
Well, whether you choose to make your dollars running an MLM or being employed, right? I think you still have to understand what an MLM business is. And I'm giving our listeners a blueprint to navigating towards a sales job. If you're having a difficult time finding employment, right? It might say you don't have the skill sets. And if you don't have the skill set, here's a place that you can start at. That is very, very little risk, and it will give you an opportunity to build the skill set. Then maybe it's easier to go get employment afterwards if that's the route that you choose to go. If you got kids that are, you know, in high school, about to go to college or in college, and they are preparing for when they leave, right, the school and you know, in the real world, right? A lot of them are confused. They're not sure what to do. And it's not their fault. They just haven't been given information. Share this stuff with them, right? I think the transition for me going out to school and into the work world was so smooth because, you know, I've been working while I was going to school, building that experience. And because of the MLM opportunity, it allowed me to get the internship at IBM, right? It allowed me to build the skill sets that I couldn't have built at other places. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would get the same experience. It wouldn't look the same and say, you know, I've worked at Starbucks, right, for a year or two versus, right, I ran an MLM business where I was licensed in securities. I, you know, was planning retirement with people, right, helping them make money work for them, right, organizing meetings, motivating, right, your peers, right? These are opportunities that you don't get in those type of jobs that you see college students, right, do.
No, not at all. Yeah, not at all. Yeah.
So extremely invaluable, not just from, you know, being young, but if you're, you know, at whatever age you are and you want to build those type of skill sets, that's a great place to start.
It's the opportunities there can be significant. So it's not, it's a starting point, and it could also be an outstanding earning opportunity.
Yeah. But and the earning opportunities, I think you have to evaluate the product or the service.
Yep.
Right? If that's a great product or service, you know that MLM business is going to stick around for a while.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. But you also have to understand, thinking back to the money triangle, it is, you are on the self-employed side. It's not passive. You can earn dollars off of your team's effort, but you still, it's not something where you can, take a couple of months off. You're going to have to work it. And if you do end up earning big dollars, you got to think in the longer term too. You still have to eventually learn how to manage it and grow it on your own. Right. And that's going to be true no matter how you make the dollars, whether it's through MLM, whether it's through employee, whether it's whatever. Right. You got to understand nobody cares more about your money than you do. And so you always want to keep that in the back of your mind. So hopefully this gave you a way to figure out if and how an MLM would fit into your overall plan, kind of into your operating system, if you will, to achieve time freedom. It's been our experience, and we've got a lot of people around us that have been involved in various forms of MLM, not various forms, various types of MLM. Some have been very, very successful at it, and they've made really huge money. But even they will tell you it is not the path to time freedom.
You only get time freedom when you quit.
Yes, exactly. You might get financial freedom in that you don't need to rely on the 8-to-5 corporate job, but it still requires your time. It's not a time freedom aspect, but you're going to have to work for it. And then once you make all that money, you're still going to learn how to manage your cash.
Yeah, we talked about the cash flow, not the cash flow, but the money triangle. Right, the three ways that money can flow to you. So if the MLM business is on the self-employment side. So
correct.
At some point, that dollar you make from that needs to be invested. You need to learn how to make money off of it. So that's where you're going to generate the passive or the true time freedom, right? It's through the investing of it.
It's through the dollars off the investment side. And that's where you get, that's where you get, like you said, the true time freedom. And that's actually
a very important point to make, so that people understand once they get into the MLM business, doesn't mean I've escaped having to manage money.
No, nope.
You still got to have to manage money to get that time freedom.
Correct, because in the MLM, you're still working for the money. So yeah, our objective in this whole discussion, and even in the podcast, is to get you to true time freedom. Right, once you get there, I promise you, it's an awesome spot to be. You want to get there. And as we've said in the other episodes, what you want to think of is, listening to the waves on a beach on a weekend, they sound pretty neat. But when you get to the point where you can listen to the waves crashing on the beach on a Tuesday waves sound incredible. And it's our belief and we know that if you'll apply what we've talked about in this episode and in other episodes in this podcast, you too can get to the point where all you get to listen to are Tuesday waves, and they are the ones you want to be listening to. As always, thank you for listening, and we'll look forward to speaking to you next time.